Hi, this is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence, kind of the poor man's CIA, and where the intelligence comes from our guests. In this case, Tommy Newman. And I only know Tommy because there's a movie that the United Way, which he's connected with, he's now senior director of the United Way of Greater Los Angeles, but there's a movie called The Advocates, and it's about really dedicated human beings, young people, who work to try to figure out who are these homeless people that are humps of humanity around us here in Los Angeles and really in every other major city, some minor cities. Are they alive or dead? What's the explanation? Why don't we care? You think of the Good Samaritan in Luke and Jesus is saying, if you want to get to heaven, care about that person that's at the side of the road and it's been robbed or beaten or abandoned. And yet we don't. And when I saw that movie, The Advocates, I just felt guilt is not the right word. I just felt, what is wrong with me? Me, and forget about the society, forget about everything else. How do I coexist with this extreme state of deprivation of human beings? Yes, it happens elsewhere. It happens with immigrants at the border now. It happens with refugees. But right here in the center of one of the most prosperous cities in the world, and certainly San Francisco is another incredibly prosperous city. And yet if you're in downtown San Francisco, you'd go to the Salesforce building, and right around it, there's a whole encampment at night. So let me ask you about that. You're a product of this California culture. You work for the United Way. You're an attorney educated in California at a good Catholic institution, University of San Francisco. You went to Loyola High School. And so your religion, your humanity would tell you this is unacceptable. So how come we've accepted it in this deep blue, progressive, Democratic-controlled state of California?
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate starting here, starting at the very basic component of this, which is humanity and human beings, because that's where we should start. We've accepted it so far because the benefits that enough people receive from the housing policies we have, the economic policies we have, outweighed the shame that we felt by knowing that Skid Row existed, but we didn't have to drive there. And if we didn't see it, it was out of sight and it was out of mind. But we hit a tipping point on the consequences of those terrible housing policies, on the consequences of those economic policies. And in LA, across the state of California, all of a sudden homelessness is everywhere. We have 6,000 people living in the San Fernando Valley in cars and RVs on what were once bucolic ranch home streets. And so all of a sudden we hit this tipping point and everybody looked around and said, what the hell's going on and how did this happen?
It happened. We're the homeless capital of America. Right?
We are, yeah, the state
of
California.
Give me those statistics.
25% of the people experiencing homelessness in the United States are in the state of California.
Now, part of that is explained by the state's defenders as if you're going to be homeless, you don't want to be where there's snow or extreme heat. You know, leave New York City and go to Los Angeles. It's easier to live on the street or near the beach. But that only takes you so far.
Which isn't very far. About 70% of the people who are living outside last lived indoors in LA County. And of that subset, 50% lived here for more than a decade indoors. So this is a homegrown challenge. Some people will come here, but if your whole life falls apart and you're in Iowa, you're not going to say, all right, well, I've lost everything and now I'm going to California. You're stuck.
So it's really a rationalization.
There are a lot of rationalizations.
Okay, so let's cut to the chase here. The fact of the matter is we're kind of in this Dickens world of London once. I mean, we have extreme wealth in San Francisco and Los Angeles and points in between. And yet we have the most abject misery, hunks. That's the only way I could describe it, because unless you're one of those social worker types and the advocates and willing to go into the tent, most of the time you're skirting around these people and you don't even worry about. I just happened getting here today. I went by the federal courthouse, the brand new federal courthouse. I think it cost a $500 million to build right in downtown L.A. on First Street. And I looked over on the right, and there was a human being. A leg stuck out and an arm stuck out. Is he alive? Dead? Some of his belongings and some garbage around him, right in front of the federal courthouse in L.A. Mm-hmm. And that's the norm. Mm-hmm. Skid Row, as you refer to it, now goes for miles. Miles. When they broke up Occupy Wall Street in downtown L.A., the complaint was, well, we have these unsightly people committing crimes. Well, that was why, because it was right within the purview of City Hall and a county state building. But we have miles. So you deal with the business community. You deal with the elite. What is the response?
And not just the business community. I mean, I think United Way sits in an interesting place. United Way is approaching its 100th anniversary in L.A., and for the first 80 years, people gave United Way money because the internet didn't exist and they didn't know how to give charitably. And so they gave it to United Way, and they trusted United Way to give that money out to community organizations that needed it. And that was across the spectrum from the SPCA to an education group to a homelessness group. And about 10 years ago, this United Way in LA, somewhat distinct from the other United Ways, said, okay, we're going to move on from that. And we're going to focus on three core issues, this being one of them. So started working on this issue 10 years ago. And interestingly, at that point in time, there were 80.
Just out of curiosity, what are the other two core?
Education and economic stability.
And so they're all connected,
they're connected
in a way.
That's right. Looking upstream on the issue. Because if you're only focusing on the people you see lying on the sidewalk, you're missing the point. There's a whole lot of things that happened before that person ended up lying on the sidewalk. So point is, we started 10 years ago, and there were about 80 homeless service providers, social service organizations, nonprofit organizations in LA County who were doing this work, each with their own database, their own set of criteria, their own list. There was no coordination across those in any way. 10 years ago, we decided to focus on this issue and build a common set of tools, narrative, database, so that everybody could talk to each other. And what we very quickly learned in that early exercise, as United Way was bringing folks together, was that we were not helping the people that needed the help the most. And in fact, we did a comparison exercise. We built a database, a list, based on, you know, clear questions. How did you end up experiencing homelessness? What's your history of trauma? And then we compared the people who were on that list on Skid Row against the people who were showing up at a new building, a new affordable housing building that was opening up. And what we saw was that the people who needed to be in that apartment the most were not the ones who were showing up to fill out the rental paperwork and offer their social security card and provide their rent history. Two different worlds. And so that was United Way's start as we got into this. And that was about 10 years ago. We built a foundation that we could then invest dollars in. And this gets to, I think, a question that you've been sort of hinting at, which is until 2016, there was no local revenue source in the city or county of Los Angeles dedicated to homelessness. When times were good, we'd sprinkle a little bit of the general fund on the issue. And when times were not good, we didn't. There was no consistent guaranteed money to build up a system of the capacity that needs to be in a county of 10 million people to address what is going to happen when people's lives fall apart, when they stop making money, when they have a sickness or a disability, when the healthcare system drives them into bankruptcy, which is happening quite a bit and continues to happen.
Well, according to the Federal Reserve, one of the recent studies, some 40% of the population is only $300 or $400 away from such disaster.
Exactly right.
And so I love your perspective because, frankly, I think the United Way deserves credit for being sort of this focal point of concern. I respect that. However, for all of the prestige of United Way and for all of their great ties with the business community, you have a partnership with them, and you've been successful in passing legislation. Mm-hmm. I mean, my hat's off to you, Proposition H and Double H or whatever. You got the county, you
within
got the
four
city.
Months, two ballot measures.
Yeah,
the first time ever in the history of County Los Angeles.
And a majority of the people said, yes, we want to spend, in one case, over $1 billion on this.
To build housing.
Yeah, to build housing, to support. So here's not a case where the population, at least in general, doesn't want to do something. They know we have a problem. You can't live in California and not know, whether you're rural or urban, that you got a great problem. And it used to be, for a long time, we said, oh, well, the problem is we're not taking care of mentally deranged people or something. And there were a lot of stuff. But now we see, no, these people may get deranged by being on the street and living in tents. But the fact is, we're talking about ordinary people. We're talking about people we know or could know or could be us. And that's the big shift. And on the other hand, even though the voters actually voted to spend money and do something, they don't want these people in their neighborhood. And one program, we're doing this for KCRW, and there was a very good KCRW program on homelessness that you participated in. And all of the members of the city council said, well, we're going to build housing. I forget the figure. It was 222 people were going to be taken in by a
222 units of supportive housing, the type of housing we need for the folks who are in the worst shape, by July 2020, which is the first set of goals towards a 10,000 unit goal.
Okay, so that's not a heck of a lot of housing for an individual councilman to be able to get going in the district.
Reasonable.
And the fact is, yes, in the districts that are already heavily impacted, that they got the housing. They're going to have it for that very modest quota. But in the districts where they want it to be someone else's problem, they didn't come up with even that miserable amount.
Well, I still have a year left to go, so I'm not ready to give up.
And if I could throw in a more pessimistic point,
sure.
We've had what some people refer to as the May massacre in the legislature here. Mm. And let's just cut to the chase, because this is the season to blame Trump and right-wing conservatives for everything. The fact of the matter is, for a liberal Democrat, California is the golden state in every sense. And the liberal Democrats in California control all the legislative branch, the governor, most of the representatives in the federal government, and so forth. They have a two-thirds majority quite often in the legislature.
Yeah, we just took over Orange County.
Yes, took over Orange County. And the last governor, the current governor, they all talk about how homelessness being our biggest problem, and they're not doing diddly about it. And in fact, in May, despite the results of that election and so forth, every single bill of substance was defeated. Mm-hmm. So even though the voters said, let's spend money on this problem, mm-hmm. the politicians don't go for it. And the main reason they don't go for it is they want a dumping ground. They don't want to spread around the problem. They don't want people in their district. And I think one of the most powerful legislators, who's head of the Appropriations Committee, has been pointed out. He was a mayor of a small, affluent district where mm-hmm. they didn't build one unit of housing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is the key to the problem? Is that in this very enlightened state, and for instance, Kamala Harris was running for president. Now it's been pointed out when she was district attorney, she was quite punitive towards mm-hmm. homeless people. What happened to liberalism in this state?
This is where we started when I pointed out the conflict between preserving the sort of bucolic way of life that we perceive California to be, everybody with their single family home. 75% of the land in the city of Los Angeles is zoned for a single family home. That's unsustainable. That's not going to work. That's not going to support a growth-based economy, which is ostensibly what we're all working towards. So this is the conflict between the people who hold the power, single family homeowners, by and large, that's who drives the decisions of elected officials, because those are the people who show up in a primary election, and preserving that way of life up against the consequences, which is that three quarters, in the most recent homeless count, got to update my numbers, of the people experiencing homelessness just need a place they can't afford. One quarter are the folks who have a severe mental illness, have some sort of substance abuse issue. And so when we look at homelessness and we talk about this challenge, we need to break it into those two pieces to start, because there are different solutions for each. There's the supportive housing. That's the thing that we're trying to build. That's what the 222 goal, and I'm going to get there. Have me back in a year, and I think I'll have gotten there by then. But then there's the other three quarters that need a place they can afford, and that butts up against the fact that Anthony Portantino is listening to the single family homeowners in La Cañada, and they would prefer not to have any apartment buildings down the street.
He's the person I mentioned who's head of the state appropriations
Correct.
Committee, but he's a Democrat.
Yes.
Right? And probably something of a liberal Democrat. I'm just, again, you're a guy who works with this all the time. You're trying to get people attention. How do people respond? That it's hopeless, I don't care, or it's somebody else's problem, or on the cutting edge issues, we can't have rent control? That was one big thing. I mean, the rents have just skyrocketed. I saw a statistic that some very large number of people in California pay almost their whole income for rent.
In LA County, 600,000 people spend 90% of their income on housing.
So let's think about that statistic. Mm-hmm. 600,000 people in LA County spend 90%. So almost all
iceberg.
Of their working hours are spent trying to pay the rent.
Yeah, and whatever's
so what's left
after
over
that,
for food, childcare, clothing, unbelievable.
That's right.
And yet we used to have rent control.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to graduate school in California, in Berkeley, in the Bay Area, they had rent control. They had it here in Santa Monica and LA and so forth. It got wiped out.
We still have rent control, but only about 10 of the cities in the state of California.
But also there was the Ellis Act and other things
and
which basically gutted
units.
It, right?
Yeah. I mean, so many important points. I just want to finish the thought on what's wrong with us and aren't we all liberals? Break it down into this more granularly. It's white people who are primarily the challenge on this housing question. White people support more multifamily housing, more apartments, whether they're affordable or not, more apartments to the tune at about 40%. And people who are not white support apartments to the tune of about 60%. So it is white people who own homes who are the cause of the homelessness crisis. And we'll need to be a part of the solution in some way unless we can build a larger coalition around them and create that pressure. I'm not ready to give up on Sacramento. Jerry Brown didn't think we could do anything about homelessness. He thought we could end climate change, which seems like one hell of a challenge. But when it comes to building housing and getting people off the streets indoors, which I think is much more in our control than the amount of carbon in the atmosphere over the last 100 years of industrialization, he threw his hands up. Gavin doesn't feel that way. We also see the state legislature engaging. Yeah, they had a bunch of failures. They didn't do anything for decades before that. The era of local control and deferring entirely to cities for housing policy is officially over. And so the question is, where do we go from there? I see the gears turning. We dug ourselves into one hell of a hole over the last 8 decades, and we will not dig ourselves out overnight, but we cannot blanket brush a failure in this moment because we didn't do anything before when in fact we are starting to do different things.
We're going to take a break now and we'll be right back. We're back, and I'm talking to Tommy Newman, a young attorney who, instead of making a lot of money developing false investments on Wall Street,
because I couldn't sit still long enough to do that,
is actually trying to do God's work here, and you are a product of Catholic education, so I can use that phrase, and helping people. And I want to cut to the chase. The reason I'm down on a kind of liberal approach to this, and I say it's a cop-out, is precisely the figures you gave. We are in the deepest blue state in the country. If by blue, we mean, and progressive Democrats. We're not old Southern racist Democrats or what have you. These are people who pride themselves on being liberal and progressive.
Those are the people that came to California, though, by the way.
Huh?
The old Southern racist Democrats.
Yeah.
They did come west.
Okay.
The Okies.
We're talking about who's run this state for most of the last 40 years.
Sure.
And they talk a good game. And yet, and you put your finger on it, they fall back on, well, it's a life choice, or, well, it's just one of those things that doesn't get better, or everything. And really what we're talking about is what? A life choice of extreme degradation. So you see, we can get it when we see children on Skid Row, right? Or we see women who are vulnerable on Skid Row. And then we support the downtown women's shelter. I remember when I worked at the LA Times, we would bus dinners and do that at least Thanksgiving time and so forth. But the idea that we have come to accept as normal this degradation of the basic human activity of shelter, family, cooking, living, safety, all of which are absent. And it's horrible, you know, living in this cardboard condo or whatever, you know,
yes.
And so forth. And then what are you saying to yourself? I don't care if that person is alive or dead or whether they need health or thing. And you walk on your way. And now if you stop, yes, there are some good folks. I said again, the movie that I think United Way helped support,
we
the
did.
Advocates and their work. Yes, they're doing it, but they're far and few between. And so I'm taking it back now. The reason I'm doing this podcast, we have California now held as a beacon for progressive politics. Right? We went against the national thing. We didn't find the free market and the libertarian and blah, blah, blah. No, we went with progressive self-consciously liberal Democrats run the state and have, even though there have been some moderate Republicans in between and a few that weren't quite so moderate. But the fact of the matter is liberal Democrats have had this as a laboratory. Mm-hmm. And then you come
except
up
for Ronald Reagan and Pete Wilson.
Yes, but don't forget,
for
Pete Wilson started out as a liberal Republican in San Diego, and Ronald Reagan, his ally in ending really the safety net, was liberal groups that again. But even let's take the whole question of so-called welfare reform that came from Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
that was the Clinton administration, sure. And you know the attack on people who needed assistance. Okay, so I do want to get in this podcast, we're going to run out of time, to the heart of not the indifference of cynical, racist, mean-spirited people. I want to know why ordinary people, and I put myself in that category, how I manage to work here at the University of Southern California, and if I go out and get a sandwich, I see people on the street, and I don't stop very rarely will mm-hmm. I stop to actually question mm-hmm. whether that person is alive or dead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a mindset. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset of indifference. Mm-hmm. And given the affluence.
It's a coping mechanism of indifference.
Well, tell me about it because you live with it and you address people.
I live here too and I drive around on the streets and it's exhausting to see the level of poverty that we have and the tens of thousands of people who are at the rock bottom of their lives. But it's a coping mechanism. I would say that the switch has flipped to some extent. In all of the polling that we do and have done for years, crime, traffic, crime, those were the number one priorities for voters in LA County, and now it is housing and homelessness. We just did a media study of the stories in LA versus the stories in the Bay Area, and the stories in LA connect the dots between the cost and availability of housing and the homelessness crisis. And so there's this light bulb it has not switched all the way on. It's on a dimmer, and it's just started to light up. I use my mother as the barometer for these things, born and raised in San Fernando Valley, lives here in LA in a lovely single family home. And we were having dinner recently and she said, "So I hear you on this whole housing crisis thing, but I'm not sure I buy it. Tell me more." And for decades, everybody said our homelessness crisis is a mental illness crisis and it's a drug addiction crisis. And housing was not even a component of the conversation. The liberal policies go as far as housing policy and then they stop because that's where the rubber hits the road. On the dream, the California dream, property rights and value. Those are the questions that are Prop 13. Like this goes all the way back to like the single family home is the castle. You don't apparently live in a single family home, so this doesn't apply to you quite as much. But that's where the rubber hits the road. Those are the people that make the policy. Those are the people that are trying to protect their economic interests. Those are the people who don't want to see the apartment building down at the end of the street. So how we can connect the dots between the suffering we see and the solutions being creating more housing that people can't afford is what will determine whether or not we succeed or fail.
Well, let me ask you finally on a more depressing note. No, because it really goes to the question of what is society? We have multinational corporations that can make a lot of money in their international operations. They don't have to be so accountable. What they happen to like to have a nation state that has an army that can protect them and push for tariffs or no tariffs, depending on what the whim is. Yeah, and so forth. So they don't want to live on some island with their billion. It would be boring. So they want to live in the Bay Area. In fact, California is the best place to live if you're one of these folks. They want to live here in LA, where we now claim a Silicon Beach and everything else. And then what do you do with the population? Which you may not even need as a workforce. You know, because after all, you've got Chinese people assembling your iPhones.
I mean, we have a service-based economy. We still need these folks.
Yeah, but we can pay them
not very much.
Yeah, and then we pride ourselves on having improved maybe the living, getting closer to a living wage. But I'm just saying, again, getting back to the Dickens view of England at a certain time, aside from being able to look the other way of this human suffering, what does it say about who we are? I mean, you live with it every day, you know. But what is it? I mean, right now, and you look at San Francisco, and even people who, you know, are school teachers and have regular jobs can't afford to live in San Francisco, you know, or to being pushed out of Oakland. And yet you need them for service. You need them for other things. It's you know, and you, the reason I'm talking to you, after all, United Way is something that came out of alliance with the business community, right? Your establishment, you're part of that.
Some days.
Well, what do people say to you when you go to them? What are people who are working in the big banking buildings and real estate and so forth? I mean, for instance, we have this issue of gentrification. Maybe that's a good way to kind of close on this. But, you know, the same L.A. downtown or San Francisco downtown that has this horrible homeless problem, horrible in its impact on the people, not just not as a visual sight, but people who live there. On the other hand, it also hurts ultimately the quality of the society that the wealthier people live in.
Yeah, it lowers the commercial property values downtown to have thousands of people living outside on the streets.
So is that your basic appeal to the business community?
I have different appeals for different communities and different interests. The business community supported both of these taxes, which is never easy.
Let me just stop you for a second. Are you going to burn out? I mean, I meet guys like you. No, really. And I think, you know, well, how great we have some people who are doing this, because I'm sure there are maybe even your mother, but certainly people in your family are saying, you went to law school for this, you know, I mean, I have a son who teaches in Oakland, you know, some days I say that to him, you know, you can't afford to live in there, but you know, and you're working so effectively and so hard. And it's a real question. The burnout.
I'd burn out if I were a corporate attorney writing memos and briefs. I wake up every day with a sense of energy and focus for this.
How old are you now?
I'm 35.
Well, that's pretty good.
And I know, somewhere, and I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old and a 3-month-old. Those guys might burn me out first. No, I think that some folks are just motivated. I don't go to church very often, so I appreciate the nod to Catholicism, but I'm not going to pretend to be actively
Well, it came up in The Advocate, which impressed me. A couple of the people referred to their own church background, which is, after all, come on, let's give the Catholic Church a plug, everybody. You know, and there are legitimate reasons to attack the Catholic
That's
Church.
A different show.
But if there's one organization that seems to care about poor people, you know, and finds dignity in the life of poor people and the struggle of them, it certainly has, at least with this current pope. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let's be grateful for that. But really, I notice on your LinkedIn page and so forth, you know, people say, what kind of jobs? Or people are always looking for jobs. And here I'm teaching at USC, and we teach lots of things, right? Do some app and you'll make money and do this and go work for that one. What's the job pitch? Why should they go work with United Way or with increasing the living wage or working with one of the unions that are doing, or work with the ACLU? Let's give the ACLU a plug. They're there defending the rights of people. And yes, homeless people on Skid Row have rights, and no one should just be able to grab their material or their possessions. Absolutely true. So what's the job pitch?
What we see in LA, what we see in California is not how it has to be. Go to another major city somewhere else on this earth, and you will not see tens and tens of thousands of people living in tents. You'll see the occasional person who's at the, you know, lowest point of their life, but you're not going to see tens and tens thousands.
In fact, you have said in New Orleans and I think Portland, you've mentioned a few places where actually they've had some dramatic improvement in this situation.
Yeah. And so what I know to be true is that this is a challenge that has been created by human beings and thus can be solved by human beings. I'm not out here trying to end earthquakes. I'm trying to change our housing policy and secure more resources so that we can bring more people indoors.
All right. So give me the crash course in the few minutes that remains. What's the primer? What can we do right now? What should we do?
It's at every level of government, and it's even just you talking to your neighbor, right? The analogy that I shared of my mom starting to accept that maybe we need to change the way we build housing. The fact that in 86 of the 88 cities in the city of in the county of Los Angeles, you can't build an apartment building on a main street because they're zoned for commercial only is absurd. There's a level of awareness and understanding that needs to happen, and the policy changes and the money will naturally follow. And so that's a core responsibility and job that I have, is to help make the case that if we make different choices, and the choices don't have to completely destabilize our lives, but they will result in some changes, then we will get different results and we will be able to bring thousands of people indoors. And all you have to do is look
at other cities on this earth or specific populations that we decided to prioritize. Veteran homelessness is down 50% in the last 7 years because we decided to, at every level of government, invest on bringing veterans in. We can bring people indoors. Homelessness is not unsolvable. And so that's the pitch. The pitch is come work on a incredibly challenging and dynamic issue with so many variables that every day your head is spinning trying to keep these puzzle pieces together. But know that we actually can do this. And if we can pull this off, if we can bring thousands of people indoors, it's a harbinger of great things to come after that, of building a more inclusive society and building a country that I think we'd all like to see, one that actually lifts everybody up.
Right. And let's be fair to the public. They did, thanks to people, you put out the word for Proposition H, and what was it, HH?
Yeah, HHH and H, all the H's.
Yeah, and we had this big battle over increasing the minimum wage, which has been approved on both the county level and the city level in Los Angeles. So the public, and you know, fairly consistently in California, they have supported bonds for education when approached in the right way. Mm-hmm. But the public response, and maybe it's a cop-out, but very often what you hear is, hey, we voted for it. You know, in this case, Proposition H. I remember when that thing was on, I thought it was going to fail. I was blown away that it passed.
It was a March ballot with 15% turnout. Only the old conservative white people voted, and yet we got them.
Yeah, and to spend over $1 billion on building housing for homeless people. Yet, you're not building the housing.
Well, this is
the
where
the money gets wrapped up.
The housing is being built. There's 7,000 units, 1,800 of which are under construction. This is where our thirst for instant gratification is a problem, right? Having not done anything about this for decades, having asked the LAPD to just chase people from block to block, lo and behold, it didn't work, right? And so now we've decided in the last 36 months to finally invest in this issue. And so it will take us time to dig out of that hole. We're already seeing those benefits of the work that we're doing. You heard me talk about all the people who are finally in the system for the first time. We know their name and we know what they need. And we didn't know that before because we weren't talking to them. We also see that if we had not passed these ballot measures, the homelessness increase in the most recent count would have been 28% instead of 12%. And so I know Steve Lopez doesn't really care about this argument, and I'm not making an excuse. I think it's evidence of the fact that we know it works and that it's starting to have some bite. It's starting to have some traction. And so the question is, how do we keep doing it and do more?
You're talking about the LA Times columnist?
Yeah, Steve's fired up these days, but I think he's missing the point. I think he's oversimplifying it by having it all be about Eric Garcetti entirely. His column on SB 50, the one about building more housing and changing the way, having Sacramento take away local control, he said, let's go slow on this. Let's take our time. I don't know if that's because he was catering to the single family homeowners who still get the Times delivered. I do get the Times delivered to my house every day. I think I'm the only person under the age of 40 who gets it. But point is, we're missing the point on what we really need to do to impact this issue. And it's going to take time because we weren't doing it for a long time.
So let me end on a point that you've made a number of times here about high-density housing and its access to transportation. And I have to admit that I'm driven by a fantasy of urban life that goes back to my first 22 years in the Bronx, where you know, and going to using the transportation system even as a 5-6-year-old, I could go on my own. And I notice in the Bay Area, for example, and maybe they need to do more of it, but there does seem to be some multiple housing units being built around BART stations. I don't know if
took an active state law to make them build those.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it seems to work, though, because, and particularly if you can keep the cost of the fare down or have breaks for poorer people on fare. I mean, it's just something so liberating, particularly in an urban environment, about not needing a car to maintain and have insurance for and get to a job and get to something else. Like hopefully right now, let's be positive about Los Angeles. Finally, there's an investment in public transportation.
Massive.
Yes. And so someone can hopefully in the next few years be in East L.A., but they want to see the Pacific Ocean. They can see it, you know. And fortunately, the California Constitution still preserves access to the ocean. And so then and this idea that you have, and I've seen in other occasions where you've brought it up, I think it's really kind of basic, that we have to get rid of that suburban vision of the single family home, and that multiple residency and higher density. And it's absurd. Even in downtown L.A., they were still building sort of these lower faux, what are they, Italianite?
Yeah, Jeffrey Palmer.
Yeah, you know, kind of places where, as you know, you want. I mean, housing projects got a bad rep, you know, but there is something terrific about being, you know, able to accommodate larger numbers of people at a lower rent. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, everybody forgets the heyday of New York City and Chicago and other cities, you know, when you had this massive immigrant populations and everything, was affordable housing.
You know, it wasn't subsidized. It was naturally occurring. You know, the only thing I would say is we don't need to turn L.A. into Manhattan here. We can just build a whole lot of 3, 4, 5-story apartments on these big commercial corridors. You drive down Pico from downtown to the west side, and the number of one-story sort of odd commercial buildings that exist is absurd. And so I'm and this is how I pitch it to my mom, I'm not talking about bulldozing large swaths of neighborhoods. There's a way to do this. In one of those most recent bills, they talked about allowing fourplexes where single-family homes are, and then that could add 9 million units in LA County. That's a lot of units. I grew up in a duplex over, you know, in the Fairfax District. It was lovely. It was charming. And that was twice the density. There were two family on the lot. So there's ways for us to do this. This is not rocket science. And we also don't need to bulldoze all of the city of Los Angeles and build big towers.
And are we finally getting a coalition that can make this happen? That's what I noticed that, for instance, on the living wage, you have for once, I mean, you have more progressive unions now that seem to want to represent the other. And you have some business interests. I mean, clearly, anybody who maybe L.A. won't be Manhattan, but we certainly are getting a big downtown. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people coming downtown. Well, it's got to be made safe and clean and functional, and that means taking care of the people who live there or are going to be there. Are you finding suddenly some change in business interests?
I'm seeing it on the horizon. It's not there yet. My light bulb on a dimmer, with we've just turned it on and we're still low, but we're starting to build the light. The light's getting a little brighter. That we're in the early stages of the light getting a little brighter, but it's coming.
Okay, that's a good point in which to end. And I want to thank Tommy Newman for... and go see this movie, The Advocates.
Mm-hmm. Which, streaming online. You can find it on your local streaming service.
Great. And it's really impressive because we're not talking about some phony idealists here who, you know, okay, say good things. These are people out there doing the nitty-gritty work and trying to make it happen. And so my hat's off to you. And I do want to encourage people to realize that we are actually talking about a notion of what is civilization. Is it a gated community? Or San Francisco, in fact, if it goes the way it's going now, will be a gated city. I mean, you know, if they had it to do over again, they probably wouldn't even have BART come in anymore, except they need people to clean the buildings and so forth. Marin County up there in Northern California kept BART out precisely because they want it to be a white flight zone of privilege and so forth. I think that you can't be a city of the future, which is what L.A. advertises as. You have to be welcoming to people who all look different ways, come from different backgrounds, have different skill sets, different employment opportunities. And the real challenge is really what you're talking about, and you're right to put it on the level of global warming and other big issues, is where is civilization headed? And you can't call yourself a civilized community when you have, what are the statistics? How many people are homeless?
58,000.
You know, and what are you going to do? And it's increasing. They're very proud that it only went up 12%, right? That's what our mayor here in Los Angeles, who was thinking of running for president, what was he going to brag? Oh, no, homelessness only went up by 28%. Okay, that's a sad but true point on which to end this. I want to thank God. You are Mario Diaz, our engineers at KCRW. Joshua Scheer is the producer of Scheer Intelligence. And here at USC, Sebastian Gubar is our ever-talented engineer. And I want to thank USC and the Annenberg School for making the facilities available. See you next week with another edition of Scheer Intelligence.